This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Are you struggling to understand the brain rot slang that Gen Alpha is using? You are not alone. While every generation has language that confuses their elders, Gen Alpha has words and phrases that trend faster than a dance on TikTok. How do we keep up? And what impact is brain rot having on Gen Alpha's language and maybe even their brains? Joining me now to discuss this is University of Cincinnati Children's Education and Entertainment Research Lab Undergraduate Director, Professor Nancy Jennings. Welcome back, Nancy.
Well, thank you.
It's great to have you here. UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Nancy, we need to start with some translations because I was preparing for this and it felt like my brain was rotting a little bit. For me and for our listeners, what are some of the most popular terms you are hearing from Gen Alpha, these young people who were born in 2010 or later?
Oh, 2010 and later.
Yeah.
It really varies depending on kind of the region even. There's a lot of different phrases that we're learning from the teenagers and adolescents.
Yeah. Do you know what skibbity means?
Oh, you've got me on that one.
This is one that I saw over and over. I read definitions. None of them made sense to me. One of the other ones that came up again and again when I was trying to prepare for this is that Ohio is slang for something bad. Is that something you understand when a young person calls something Ohio?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No, I hadn't seen that one yet.
Okay.
So.
Okay, we may have to come back and go, try to spend some time translating all this. As I mentioned, Nancy, new slang is part of the deal with every new generation. It's just this time-honored way to confuse your parents, your grandparents. Do you think there's a way in which some of these terms, some that are based on nonsense like skibbity, I guess I wonder, could they have a different impact than the slang of past generations?
I think that's a great question. We, like you said before, we've seen influences of previous generations. Kind of every generation comes up with their own language and their own terms. And we could even see that with advertising as well, that you want us to, often advertising wants us to learn the brand name rather than the product itself. So I think we're still going to see that kind of influence throughout particularly with use of social media. And I think it's more common because we actually see it now, and it's much more widespread, whereas it may have only been if you had interactions with a younger generation.
Yeah. And I've seen the term brain rot thrown around. Is that something that you are seeing? What does that term mean to you?
It means a lot of things. For me, brain rot is concerning, right? Because we're worried about the brain development of children, and we're worried about the impact of screen media on how children are developing. It's somewhat controversial right now because there's some studies that suggest there is an influence in that the brains are developing differently, but the question is how do we interpret that? Do we interpret that as a deficit, or do we interpret that as this is an evolution, this is a new way of their of brain development? So.
We're talking about brain rot slang, what it is and what kind of impact it's having. Do you have questions or comments? Are your children or grandchildren confusing you? We're here for you. Give us a call, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. You mentioned this concern, and I guess, in some ways, I guess that comes along with any new technology that young people are exposed to. I remember when I was a kid, there was TV.
Right.
And there were not very many channels, but it was like Will Gilligan's Island, rot your brain if you watch too much of it after school. What do you think, where are you coming down on this? Some people seem to talk about brain rot kind of casually, almost like it's a badge of honor about how much social media they're using, how much time they're spending on their phones. What is a more serious aspect of this whole thing?
Right. There's definitely concerns, right? Overuse of anything can be a bad thing. So we really need to think about moderation. And we also need to think about what kinds of things we're doing with our screens and what kinds of content we're being exposed to. There has been a great deal of concern about overexposure, particularly with teens and adolescents, young adults, and depression, and anxiety, and fear of missing out, FOMO.
Yeah, I have a daughter who was born with FOMO. I think she popped out of the womb with FOMO, but please go ahead.
So yeah, there's definitely some concern there. But on the other hand, you also see teenagers connecting with other teenagers that they may not have had connections with before, or somebody that's not in their neighborhood, somebody who shares a similar identity or a chronic illness that they don't have in their immediate neighborhood. So I think the evidence is still kind of coming in as to whether or not it's I kind of come down on the position that it's not completely evil and it's not completely good. It is about the way you use it.
Yeah, like so much of life, there's a lot of gray in there. It's hard to be black or white.
Right.
What you mentioned, concerns about anxiety, concerns about depression. Are there concerns about screen time and conditions like ADD or ADHD? I mean, are those things that can really be problematic or exacerbated by too much screen time?
Yeah, there have been research that looks at that as well, looks at attention deficit. And there is some concern about the pacing of television shows. The study I'm thinking of in particular looked at television shows.
Sure, but I imagine some of it is probably applicable.
Yes, exactly. So if you're thinking about the pacing of content that you're being exposed to, younger children need slower pace. And so if they're getting a slower paced content, slower paced podcast, something along those lines, then it's more, they're more receptive to it. Whereas if they get something that's more high speed, then yeah, that is kind of contributing to that, those concerns about attention deficit.
This is very helpful for me to hear because I can remember watching Dora the Explorer. Now, I'm not advocating for Dora, but with one of my daughters years ago and thinking, why is Dora saying something and just staring at us like that? I mean, I guess it was that pacing. It annoyed the heck out of me as a 30-something year old, but that's what she needed as a much younger person.
Right. And my daughter, too. Yeah. Totally adored Dora. Sesame Street characters also take a pause. Oftentimes that pause is there for what we would call a parasocial interaction. It gives the child a time to respond back and form a relationship with the characters and interact in their own kind of way. But it's a one-sided interaction.
Very much. Unless, and I imagine, is it important that whether it's children's television or social media, I would imagine it's helpful for you as the parent to be sitting there to help navigate and help be the person who absorbs that interaction. How big a deal is that in all these settings?
That's huge. And I think that's also something we see that comes out of the literacy research as well, that reading together, watching and co-viewing and co-playing video games together, those spark conversation, they spark relationship building that's really pivotal for child development. So,
yeah. Even critical thinking, because I would imagine maybe there's something that some character on TV says that maybe you don't agree with as a parent. You can talk to your child about raising questions, or if they see something on TikTok that doesn't make a lick of sense to you, you can talk to them about that.
Exactly.
What are some of the other ways that this constant connectivity that young people have now, I'm thinking of children and teens, but even young adults, they're just constantly connected. What are some of the other ways that's affecting those people?
Sure. So there's definitely research connecting it with disruptions in sleep. So, you know, they'll have their phones next to them, literally by their ear, and they'll constantly hear the buzzing or the pinging. And so, yeah, it can be very disruptive to sleep, which we all know that sleep deprivation is problematic. So, there's lots of different ways that it's having an impact.
Yeah. Well, and that pinging, that gets back to kind of the FOMO, because they think, oh, that might be something really important. I don't want to miss whatever that is.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. At this point, you know, you talked about how there are some really good things that social media can help connect to young people, and there are some really terrible things. It seems like the genie's kind of out of the bottle. It's too late to talk about screen time and social media as good or bad. Is it more helpful to talk about it as healthy or unhealthy? What's the best way to really approach conversations about this?
Thanks. Yeah, I really appreciate that. So, I would say thinking about it in terms of healthy versus unhealthy habits. As we started off kind of talking about moderation, thinking about, am I spending too much time on this app? We've kind of moved past a little bit of that as well, that it's not just the amount of time, but it's how you're using it and who you're interacting with. So is it a healthy relationship that you have with your media and with your device, or is it an unhealthy relationship?
Yeah, this reminds me of a conversation we had a few months ago about schools and cell phone policies and some students expressing relief when they had to give up their cell phones for a day, because if everybody has them, of course you want to have it, but that's got to be some intense pressure for young people to feel like they always have to be paying attention to that thing.
Right.
I mean, is that something that people are kind of worried about too?
Definitely. The constant need to pay attention, the constant interactions, not missing something, all these types of things increase your anxiety. There's also research to suggest when you do hear the ping, that even that it's kind of like that Pavlov response, right? So it does like heighten your heartbeat, make your heart go faster and things like that. It's definitely things to keep in mind.
How can parents manage their kids' screen time or influence it, make sure it's more healthy than unhealthy, without isolating them from their peers? I mean, so many kids, young people are on these devices now, and they really want to understand what these references are and understand what their peers are talking about. It seems like some of these skibbity things that we were talking about earlier become a basis for conversation in the way young people are communicating. So I guess I'm wondering, what's your advice for helping parents manage that without isolating their children and really separating them from these phrases that are helping to fuel their peers' conversations?
Right. I would highly recommend that the parents themselves consider what types of device use they're modeling. So are they on their devices frequently? Do they they call it technoference, that they're caught up in their cell phone, in their device, that they're not paying attention to what the child is doing or asking for? So some of these types of things as well, if the parent can look at, can be like, can verbalize too, oh, I am not paying attention to you, I am so sorry, let me turn this off and I will talk to you, then that sets an example and models behavior that the child can then engage in as well.
Yeah. Do parents almost need to be on these platforms themselves to get a better understanding? And I ask that because, Lord knows, I don't want to start a tickety-talk. Like, that's not my thing. But I wonder if that's even helpful, because these algorithms really steer you down a path. And as a 56-year-old woman, I'm not going to get steered down the same path as a 15-year-old.
Right. So I do think it is helpful to have the social media accounts, just so that you're familiar with what they might be exposed to. And you can type in some language to try to get the algorithm to get to you, to a 15-year-old. I think it's helpful to know what they're being exposed to. So
yeah, I guess I'm wondering, is that one way that parents and other adults who spend a lot of time with young kids, I'm thinking classroom teachers, Lord, they're saints for many things, but yes. For this, is it important for them to try to keep up with this, or is that even possible? Some of these trends with the language are changing so quickly. How do you understand what they're saying?
Right, right. I do think it is. I do think it's if nothing else, too, it's a bridge, right? So you have something in common to talk to your students with, parents with their children, caregivers with the children in their care. So yeah, definitely, you know, it also gives the child a form of power, right? So if you don't understand skibbity-doo, then you can ask them to explain it to you. And it also then that helps also with language development, because they have to think about, well, how would I explain this to somebody else?
Oh.
So yeah, there's lots of different ways to think about, access and the language that the kids are using.
Yeah. Do we also, though, just need to accept that once we finally understand what skibbity means, it won't be cool anymore? The young people will stop saying skibbity once all the moms and grandmas and teachers, I mean, they can just move on so quickly to something else, can't they?
Oh, they sure will. They definitely will. We see that even with different platforms. You know, Facebook is not for young children, not for teenagers anymore. They've given that up and passed that on to the older generation. Yep. So they'll come up with a new term, and we'll have to learn that new one too.
Yeah, you're so right about those platforms. I created an Instagram account to try to stalk my children, and then once they figured out who I was, they moved to Snapchat, and I thought, I can't keep doing this.
Right.
I can't chase you onto every one of these things. So,
right.
Oh, it's tough to be old, but it's tough to be young too. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati Children's Reading. Nope, I haven't. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Children's Education and Entertainment Research Lab Undergraduate Director, Professor Nancy Jennings. Thank you so much for your time today, Nancy. It's always fun to talk to you. You always have a wealth of information.
Great. Well, thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. If you miss Cincinnati Edition live, you're in luck. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.